Well, welcome, my friends, to The Catholic Reason, a radio production of St. Michael Catholic Radio based in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, where we think through various claims made by the Catholic Church concerning issues of faith, morality, and culture, and provide reasons behind those claims. I'm Dr. Carlo Brusort, staff apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers, and a member of the Chancery Evangelization Team here at the Diocese of Tulsa in Eastern Oklahoma. The Catholic Reason airs locally here in Tulsa every Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. on St. Michael Catholic Radio 94.9 and 102.9. But you may be listening on your own local Catholic radio station at a different time, since the Catholic Reason is now aired on other Catholic stations throughout the country. So if you're listening outside the Tulsa area, welcome and thanks for joining me today. Note that you can download the show through whichever podcast platform you use by subscribing to the Eastern Oklahoma Catholic Podcast. That's the Eastern Oklahoma Catholic Podcast. You can also access the archived episodes at my website, carlobrusort.com, under the audio tab. You'll see the Catholic Reason there. In last week's episode, we gave evidence that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us. And we looked at some biblical arguments and an argument from history and early Christian testimony. In today's episode, I'd like to continue with this theme that the saints do, in fact, intercede for us and provide further evidence for this claim. And I want to look at three arguments. The first two are theological in nature and come from St. Thomas Aquinas. One is from God's goodness, and the other is from the fact that the saints are cooperators with God in our salvation, and they know it. These theological arguments provide plausibility that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us. And the last argument is from the miraculous. That's to say, miracles that have occurred due to the specific intercessory prayer of the saints. And of course, this would be an argument to establish that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us, going beyond plausibility and offering a proof. But keep in mind, everything I say here in today's episode is in written form in my new book, The Saints Pray for You. So I want to share with you in today's episode what I have there in the book. So let's start with Aquinas' argument from God's goodness. To start off, it's important to note that this argument seeks to show the reasonableness of the thesis that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us. As such, it seeks plausibility, not certainty. And again, like I said, it's taken from St. Thomas Aquinas in the supplement to his Summa Theologiae, Question 72, Article 2. And we can start by considering God's goodness and its relation to creatures. Aquinas starts with the basic truth. God pours out his goodness on things not only by giving things that which is proper to them, like for us as human beings, the powers of intellect and will, but by giving things the power to cause goodness in others, a dignity of causality, if we could put it like that. In other words, God works by means of what we call in philosophy secondary causes. He doesn't just do everything himself directly. He involves creatures and makes them to be real causes of things in the world, not just occasions upon which God directly brings about some effect, but that God, given his omnipotence and divine power, can bring about effect through the real causality of a creature. Now, for Aquinas, this is not at all different when it comes to the saints in heaven. Just as God pours out his goodness by making us here on earth real causes of blessings in other people's lives through our intercessory prayer, so too it's fitting that God would continue to pour out his goodness by making the saints in heaven real causes of blessings in our lives through their intercessory prayer. And this stands to reason. If you think about it, it doesn't make sense that God would see it fitting to manifest his goodness by making Christians on earth real causes of good in others through intercessory prayer, but not the Christians in heaven. That's to say, why give us that dignity, but deny the Christians in heaven of that dignity? Why give us that gift here on earth, but not the saints in heaven? That doesn't make sense. What is it about Christians in heaven causing goodness in others that would possibly impede the manifestation of God's goodness? If God's goodness is manifest by us exercising real causality and interceding for others, thereby manifesting the divine goodness here on earth, why wouldn't Christian intercession in heaven be able to manifest that divine goodness and even in a greater way? If God saw it fitting to manifest his goodness by making Christians on earth real causes of goodness in others through intercessory prayer, well then surely it would be fitting for God to do the same for Christians in heaven, continuing to manifest his divine goodness by bestowing upon the saints in heaven this real causality for them to bring about goodness in our lives here on earth through their intercessory prayer. Again, this is an argument for the reasonableness and the fittingness of the saints in heaven, in fact, interceding for us as opposed to providing certainty, but I find it quite persuasive concerning the fittingness of it. Now, there's another theological argument that we can give in support of our claim that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us. And it shows that the saints' factual intercession is reasonable given their experience of the beatific vision. And like the above argument, we can turn to St. Thomas Aquinas as our guide. Again, in the supplement to his Summa Theologiae, Aquinas argues that the saints are aware of their role as intercessors and of the requests made of them, again, given the beatific vision in heaven. And Aquinas begins with the idea that seeing the divine essence gives knowledge of what pertains to self. And here's what he writes. Again, this is the supplement to his Summa Theologiae, question 72, article 1. He writes this: each of the blessed must needs see in the divine essence as many other things as the perfection of his happiness requires. So he's going to need to see what the perfection of his happiness requires. For the perfection of a man's happiness requires him to have whatever he will and to will nothing amiss. And each one wills with the right will to know what concerns himself. Notice, he's going to know what concerns himself, and that is part and parcel of constituting the perfection of the blessed's happiness. Hence, Aquinas concludes, since no rectitude is lacking to the saints, that is, they cannot lack any sort of order, there cannot be any disorder, they wish to know what concerns themselves. And consequently, it follows that they know it in the Word. So for Aquinas, the blessed contemplate God in his eternal perfection, seeing in him whatever the perfection of their happiness requires. So to state it differently, whatever their happiness requires, they're going to see it in seeing the divine essence. Aquinas then reasons that such happiness requires that there be nothing lacking, right? Nothing lacking in what the blessed will. Otherwise, there would be some desire not satisfied, which makes for an incomplete state of happiness. So whatever they're willing in seeing the divine essence must be accomplished. Otherwise, they would have a desire that's unsatisfied and therefore not complete happiness. Next, Aquinas reasons that the will of the blessed in heaven involves knowledge of that which concerns themselves. And this is reasonable, given that happiness would be incomplete if there were some further knowledge to be had about self, because we all desire knowledge, and so if there was a desire insatiated, it wouldn't be complete happiness. The intellect's desire would not be entirely satiated. And Aquinas notes that this is not some egotistical desire to have knowledge of self, since no rectitude is lacking to the saints, each willing with a right will. Therefore, Aquinas concludes, the blessed will to know what concerns themselves, and they see it in God. So again, the blessed will to know, they want to know everything that concerns themselves insofar as they're seeing the divine essence. And insofar as they see the divine essence, they will in fact know everything that concerns themselves. That knowledge being given to them, the intellect being enlightened to come to that knowledge concerning everything about themselves, and thereby the intellectual desire for knowledge being satiated. Now, the next step of Aquinas' argument is to show that the saints cooperate with God and assisting the needy in their salvation. So far, they want to know everything that concerns themselves. So Aquinas is going to argue one of the things that does concern themselves is cooperating with God and assisting the needy in their salvation. Here's what he writes. Now it pertains to their glory that they assist the needy for their salvation, for thus they become God's cooperators, than which nothing is more godlike, as Dionysius declares. Now, Aquinas doesn't give a defense of this claim, but the idea that Christians have a role in cooperating with God and assisting others to attain their salvation is clearly biblical. Consider, for example, some of Paul's statements. Romans 10:1, "Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for them is that they may be saved." Paul's praying for the salvation of the Romans. Actually, he's praying for the people of Israel there in writing to the Romans. 1 Corinthians 9:22, "To the weak I became the weak that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men that I might by all means save some." Paul views himself as a cooperator with Christ in saving other people. And finally, in 1 Timothy 4:16, "Take heed to yourself," he tells Timothy, "and to your teaching. Hold to that, for by doing so you will save both yourself and your hearers." So cooperating with God and assisting others to attain their salvation is clearly part of what it means to be a Christian. And one way this assistance is carried out, which is pertinent to the topic at hand, is through intercessory prayer. Now, I'm coming up on my first break, so we're going to have to hit the pause button here. When we come back on the other side, I'm going to wrap up this argument here from St. Thomas Aquinas and the saints knowing their cooperation with God and assisting the others in salvation. Talk to you on the other side. Well, welcome back, my friends, to The Catholic Reason, a radio production of St. Michael Catholic Radio, based in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. I'm Dr. Carlo Broussard, staff apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers at Catholic.com. and a member of the Chancery Evangelization Team here at the Diocese of Tulsa in Eastern Oklahoma. In today's episode, we're looking at more reasons to believe that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us. And one of the arguments that are articulated in our first segment was from God's goodness, that it belongs to God's goodness to pour forth upon his creatures the dignity of being real causes of good in others, and how God bestows that dignity upon us here on earth as Christians, being real causes of goodness in others through our intercessory prayer. And if God saw it fitting to manifest his goodness in that way for us here on earth, how much more would he continue to manifest his goodness by bestowing upon the saints in heaven the power to intercede for us here on earth to be real causes and bringing about goodness in our lives? And then we also began to look at a second argument, a theological argument to establish the reasonableness that the saints in fact do intercede for us. And that is from the saints knowing themselves as cooperators with God in salvation. And as I pointed out, we're getting this argument from St. Thomas Aquinas in question 72 of the supplement to his Summa Theologiae in Article 1. And he starts out with articulating the principle that seeing the divine essence in the beatific vision gives the blessed knowledge of what pertains to themselves. And then one of the things that is going to pertain to themselves, which the blessed desire to know in full, would be cooperating with God in assisting others in their salvation. And as I pointed out before the break, St. Thomas Aquinas doesn't defend that principle. He just assumes that the saints, in seeing the divine essence, would know themselves as cooperators with God in assisting the needy in salvation. But I gave three passages from the Bible where we can establish this principle. In Romans 10:1, St. Paul praying for Israel that they may be saved. 1 Corinthians 9:22, St. Paul viewing himself as saving others and cooperating with Christ. 1 Timothy 4:16, saying how Timothy, holding fast to the doctrine, will save himself and those who hear him. So cooperating with God and assisting others to attain their salvation clearly is a part of what it means to be a Christian. And one way that assistance is carried out to assist God, cooperating with God in helping others in their salvation, is through intercessory prayer. Now, with that in hand, if assisting fellow Christians to attain salvation through intercessory prayer is essential to what it means to be a Christian on earth, well, then surely it would be part of our Christian identity in heaven. It doesn't make sense that such assistance through intercessory prayer would cease to be part of the Christian life in a state of existence where the Christian life is perfected, right? I mean, if that's part of the Christian life in its imperfect state, assistance for other salvation through intercessory prayer, how much more would that be a part of the Christian life in the perfected state? Much more. Remember, the blessed in heaven are those whom God, in the words of Paul in Romans 8:29, predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son. They were perfectly conformed to the image of Christ. To be perfectly conformed to Christ is to be perfected in what it means to be a Christian. Since being a Christian involves cooperating with God to assist others in attaining their salvation through intercessory prayer, it follows that it belongs to those in heaven who are perfectly conformed to Christ to be cooperators with God to give such assistance. Moreover, cooperating with God to assist others to attain salvation through intercessory prayer is a way by which Christians conform themselves to the image of the Son. Since the Son of God, as Hebrews 7:25 describes, for all time saves those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. Conformity to Christ involves doing what Christ does. What does Christ do? He forever lives to make intercession for God's people. The blessed in heaven are perfectly conformed to Christ. And so therefore, it's at least reasonable to think it still belongs to the blessed in heaven to assist others to attain salvation through intercessory prayer, just like it belonged to them to do so while here on earth. If they didn't have such a role, well then, their conformity to the image of Christ would be less perfect in heaven than what it was here on earth. But that's absurd, right? So just to state it differently, it belonged to a Christian's life in being conformed to Christ to assist others to attain their salvation through intercessory prayer here on earth. If that's the case, well then the saints in heaven who are perfectly conformed to Christ must continue to assist others in attaining their salvation through intercessory prayer. If the saints in heaven did not continue to assist others in attaining salvation through their intercessory prayer, they would be less conformed to Christ than they were here on earth, which is absurd, right? Obviously, conformity to Christ is going to be more perfect in the heavenly state, in the beatific vision. And so whatever belongs to that life of being conformed to Christ, namely assisting others in attaining salvation through their intercessory prayer, is going to belong to that perfect conformity to Christ in the heavenly existence. Now, the last piece of the puzzle for Aquinas is that the blessed must be intellectually aware of that which is necessary to fulfill this role of cooperating with God to assist the needy to attain salvation, which is knowledge of the invocations made of them to assist in salvation. Here's what he writes. Wherefore, it is evident that the saints are cognizant of such things as are required for this purpose. What's the purpose? The purpose is to assist others in salvation through intercessory prayer. And so Aquinas is arguing they're going to have to be cognizant, have conscious awareness of that which is necessary to achieve that purpose. And so he concludes, it's manifest that they know in the Word, that is, they know in knowing the divine essence, they know the vows, devotions, and prayers of those who have recourse to their assistance. It would be futile for the saints in heaven to have the role of an intercessor without being able to know the requests made of them, right? Again, their role is to assist others in attaining their salvation through intercessory prayer. Why would they have that role unless they could be aware of the requests made of them? And so you have the establishment that they are cooperators with God in assisting others to attain their salvation. That assistance involves intercessory prayer. And given the fact that that's their role, cooperators with God, and helping others attain their salvation through intercessory prayer, comes with that knowledge of the request that would be made of them. So far, with Aquinas' help, we have reasons to believe that the saints in heaven have the role of an intercessor and that they would know whatever requests are made of them. But I think we can go a bit beyond what Aquinas says here and ask, how does this imply the idea that the saints do in fact intercede for us? So far, we said that they have the role to be cooperators with God in helping others attain their salvation, which would involve intercessory prayer. And if that's their role, then they would need to be aware of the requests made of them. But how do we know they in fact do? Well, consider that it's God who willed the saints in heaven to play the role as a cooperator with him in helping others attain salvation through intercessory prayer. If that's their God-given role, well, then it's fitting that God allow them to live out that role and actually intercede. It doesn't seem fitting that God would make such a role essential to their Christian identity, perfected in heaven, and never allow them to live it out. So I think this factual intercession is implied in what we've said already with establishing the saints having the role of cooperators with God, which would involve intercessory prayer. But I just wanted to tease it out and flesh it out to be thorough there. So the angelic doctor, St. Thomas Aquinas, is often known for his philosophical insights, right, concerning God's existence and nature, the Trinity, and all things pertaining to Christ. But his insights concerning the lower mysteries and the hierarchy of truths are just as profound. And the intercession of the saints is no exception to that. All right. So that completes our two theological arguments that I wanted to give in today's episode to provide evidence that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us. We gave an argument from God's goodness and bestowing upon his creatures real causal power to bring about blessings in others, which would include intercessory prayer for Christians here on earth and Christians in heaven. And then secondly, an argument from the saints knowing themselves as cooperators with God in salvation and helping others attain their salvation, which would include intercessory prayer. Okay, now I'd like to turn to an argument from healing miracles, an appeal to the miraculous as evidence that the saints in heaven in fact do intercede. Whenever we're talking about evidence that the saints in heaven intercede for us, it's important that we don't forget the verified miracles attributed to a particular saint's intercession. And I'd like to look at some of these here, which again, note that I have this in written form in my new book, The Saints Pray for You. So here I'm constructing my narrative, right, pulling from the book and all of the resources from which I constructed my narrative are cited in my book, The Saints Pray for You. So I would encourage you to get a copy of the book in order to get the citation. So the first that we're going to look at is a healing miracle through St. Pio's intercession, St. Padre Pio. But I'm coming up on a break here. We have a few moments. So rather than diving right in, I'm going to hit the pause button here. And on the other side of the break, we'll start fresh with this healing miracle attributed to St. Pio's intercession, thereby constituting one miraculous piece of evidence among others for the claim that the saints do in fact intercede for us. So you're listening to The Catholic Reason. I'm Dr. Carlo Broussard. Don't go anywhere. I'll talk to you on the other side of the break. God bless. Well, welcome back, my friends, to The Catholic Reason, a radio production of St. Michael Catholic Radio based in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. I'm Dr. Carlo Broussard, staff apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers at Catholic.com and a member of the Chancery Evangelization Team here at the Diocese of Tulsa and Eastern Oklahoma. If you're just joining us today for this episode, we're looking at evidence for the claim that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us. Over the course of our first two segments of today's episode, we've looked at two theological arguments, one from God's goodness, another from the saints knowing themselves as cooperators with God and assisting others to attain their salvation, which would involve intercessory prayer. And then before our last break, I began to articulate our third argument for the claim that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us, and that is an argument from miraculous healings. Miracles, miraculous healings in particular, attributed to the saints' intercession, or a particular saint's intercession. And the first one that I'd like to look at here is a healing miracle through St. Pio's intercession. And this is the healing of One named Consiglia de Martino, attributed to the intercession of St. Pio of Pietrelcina, commonly known as Padre Pio. Now, this particular miracle was used for Padre Pio's beatification, so it's considered to be legit by the Vatican. Martino was a married woman with three children from Salerno, Italy. On October 31st, 1995, she had an acute pain in her neck, which eventually became a growth that grew to the size of a grapefruit. On November 1st, she went to Riuniti Hospital in Salerno, and I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of some of these Italian cities, so I apologize for that. Now, Martino received two CAT scans, CAT scans, both of which revealed that a thoracic duct in her neck, had ruptured, diffusing approximately 2 quarts of lymphatic fluid. And it's reported that the doctor affirmed that the surgery would be, quote-unquote, difficult and complicated, and it needed to be done as soon as possible. Upon receiving the news, Martino turned to the intercession of Padre Pio and called Brother Modestino Fucci at the monastery in San Giovanni Rotondo to inform him of her ailment and request his prayers. Fucci prayed at Pio's tomb, asking for St. Pio's intercession. On November 2nd, Martino noticed a decrease in the pain in her neck and a rapid diminution of swelling. The doctors examined Martino's decreased swelling the next day, November 3rd, prior to the scheduled surgery. The x-rays showed not only a complete cure of the rupture of the thoracic duct, the largest vessel of the lymphatic system, which caused the lymphatic spilling, but also the complete disappearance of the large 2-quart deposit in her neck, as well as other liquid deposits in her abdomen. The surgery was canceled, and the doctors ordered another CAT scan on November 6th, only to find confirmation of the results of the x-ray taken on November 3rd. Martino was released on November 2nd, and she later underwent more examinations, and none of them showed long-term effects of the condition. The local diocese conducted its investigation at the Salerno Curia from July 24, 1996 to June 27, 1997, and accepted the validity of the cure with its decree the following September 26. Once the acts of the diocese were published, the documentation was studied by experts and a medical consultant. Unanimously, these experts announced on April 30th, 1998, that Martino's cure was, quote, extraordinary and scientifically inexplicable. The healing was then studied by two special bodies, first by a special Congress of Theologians on June 22nd, 1998, and then on October 20th by the Ordinary Session of Cardinals and Bishops. The crown jewel of this investigation took place on December 21st, when, in the presence of Pope John Paul II, the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints officially published its decree of Padre Pio's miracle. So we have a Vatican-recognized miracle specifically attributed to the intercessory prayer of Padre Pio. And so that would serve as confirmation, right, that the saints in heaven do, in fact, intercede for us. This is not just some miraculous effect that's being brought about within a vacuum. It's being brought about specifically as a result of an appeal to St. Pio to intercede for Martino, as one of the brothers did, Brother Modestino Fucci did, at the monastery in San Giovanni Rotondo when praying at the tomb of Pio specifically for Martino's healing, and that healing indeed taking place. Now, the next healing miracle we're going to look at is the healing of baby James Fulton Ingstrom, a healing attributed to Venerable Fulton Sheen's intercession. The miracle occurred on September 16th, 2010, in Peoria, Illinois. James was delivered stillborn. The umbilical cord had become knotted and cut off blood and oxygen. When delivered, James didn't have a pulse. His arms and legs were flopped to his sides, and he was blue in color. Being that James was delivered at home, the midwife had to perform CPR on him as they waited for the ambulance. The ambulance came 20 minutes past the delivery and took James to the hospital. The doctors worked on James with resuscitation techniques and epinephrine injections for about an hour, but to no avail. And they decided to declare James dead. Monsignor James Cruz, a diocesan vicar general of the Diocese of Peoria, who participated in the investigation, reports as follows. They were continually doing blood tests on the baby. And the one doctor said that the toxicity in his blood was really that of a corpse that was 1 week or so dead. They were about to declare him dead. So that provides the scientific evidence that James, baby James there, was dead, okay? All right, so he was, I mean, that provides evidence that he was not like alive and just unconscious, but that seemingly he was dead from a scientific perspective. And during this time, James's parents were praying to Fulton Sheen, asking specifically for his intercession for this healing, for a healing of James. And at the moment the doctors were about to declare James dead, his heart started beating for the first time at a rate of 148 beats per minute, which is normal for a newborn. For a newborn to instantaneously move from lifelessness to ordinary cardiac activity was extraordinary. Cruz reports the following. Without, remember the vicar general here, without any medical explanation, his heart started beating normally and he was breathing normally. And that's one of the components for a miracle, that there's a restoration to a normal level of activity, in this case, cardiac activity. What is also extraordinary is that there's no record of someone surviving without a heartbeat and respiration beyond 20 minutes. Jason Gray, Bishop Jinky's appointed Episcopal delegate for the inquiry, said that's what was known to the medical science and in medical journals at the time. Given that James was in cardiac arrest and without oxygen for 61 minutes, the doctors expected, reasonably, that James would suffer massive organ failure. When there was no organ failure, they predicted severe disabilities, including cerebral palsy, which would require James to be strapped to a wheelchair with feeding tubes for his whole life. They also predicted blindness and virtually no mental activity. Well, guess what? James defied the odds and didn't manifest any of these deficiencies or symptoms. He developed like a normal child. A 7-member panel of medical specialists assembled in Peoria, the place of the miracle, to examine all the medical records associated with the case, as well as James himself. And they concluded in March of 2014 that James's recovery and development could not be explained through any scientifically known natural causation. Given the circumstances, he should have been either dead or severely disabled. A panel of theologians was subsequently convened and rendered a decision attributing James's restoration to health to a miracle occurring through the intercession of Fulton Sheen. So the theologians analyze it and look at it to see if this would require divine power. They conclude yes. And so on July 6th, the Vatican Congregation for the Causes of the Saints promulgated the decree approving Sheen's miracle. Technically speaking, a miracle brought about through by ultimately divine power through the intercessory prayer of Sheen's prayers, the intercessory prayer of Fulton Sheen. So there we have two healing miracles, one from St. Padre Pio, another from Venerable Fulton J. Sheen. Now, next up is the healing of Floribeth Mora Diaz, which was attributed to the intercession of Pope John Paul II. Diaz was a Costa Rican lawyer. She suffered from a brain aneurysm in April of 2011, and she had a series of tests, including a brain scan and a 3-hour surgery. The aneurysm didn't leave Diaz on death's bed. Alejandro Vargas, the neurosurgeon who admitted and operated on Diaz, reports there was only a 2% chance that another such aneurysm could kill her within a year. But even with a small chance of another aneurysm causing her death, Diaz began to ask for John Paul II's intercession, including against severe headaches and fatigue that was associated with the aneurysm that she had. And on the night of John Paul II's beatification, Diaz fell asleep, and upon wakening, she heard the voice of John Paul II telling her, "Get up, don't be afraid." And she got up out of bed and told her husband what had happened, and she reported that she immediately felt, quote-unquote, an incredible improvement. Now, I'm coming up on our last break here, so I'm going to have to hit the pause button. More to come with this particular healing miracle on the other side. Well, welcome back, my friends. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Catholic Reason, a radio production of St. Michael Catholic Radio based in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. I'm Dr. Carlo Broussard, staff apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers, and a member of the Chancery Evangelization Team here at the Diocese of Tulsa in eastern Oklahoma. In today's episode, we're looking at more evidence for the claim that the saints, in fact, do intercede for us. And today, so far, we've provided two theological arguments, one from God's goodness, one from the saints' knowledge that they were cooperators with God in helping others attain salvation, which would involve intercessory prayer in and through seeing the divine essence or the beatific vision. And then the last argument that we're looking at is one from history, one from the miraculous, appealing to healing miracles attributed to specific saints and their intercession. And so far, we've looked at a healing miracle attributed to St. Padre Pio's intercession. We've looked at a healing miracle attributed to Venerable Fulton J. Sheen's intercession. And before our last break, we were looking at a healing miracle through the intercessory prayer of Pope St. John Paul II for a woman by the name of Floribeth Mora Diaz, a Costa Rican lawyer. To repeat what I said prior to the break, just to refresh our memories here, is that she had suffered a brain aneurysm in April of 2011, and she had a series of tests, a brain scan, and three-hour surgery. And the aneurysm didn't leave Diaz on death's bed, but nevertheless, it was there, causing her severe headaches and fatigue, and only a 2% chance that she would receive another aneurysm that could possibly kill her. But on the night of John Paul II's beatification, we're told that Diaz fell asleep, and upon awakening, she heard the voice of Pope St. John Paul II telling her to get up and not be afraid. And when she got up out of her bed, she reports that she felt incredible improvement in her condition. Remember, she was suffering severe headache and fatigue. And so she wakes up feeling incredible. She tells her husband about it, how she's no longer feeling fatigued, and she felt strong. And she believed that she had been healed. And that July, the relics of Pope John Paul II arrived in Costa Rica, and Diaz, along with her husband, went to see them. On November 11th, Diaz went to the hospital for a resonance test and was scheduled to visit with the doctor the next day to see the results. And here's how she describes that meeting. He looked at the monitor and was stunned. He would look at one frame and then another and another and continued to be stunned. And when he said that there was nothing wrong, I said, "I knew it." Vargas describes it from his point of view, Vargas being the doctor. What we found remarkable, unbelievable really, was that by November there was absolutely no trace in her brain that she had ever had an aneurysm. I had never seen this in my career. 2 months later, after detailing on the internet the series of events that led to Diaz's healing, the priest of the parish where she visited the relics was contacted by ecclesiastical authorities from Rome and reached out to Diaz, asking her to undergo some more tests, which she did. And the tests all came back as if there had never been anything wrong with her. No traces of the aneurysm. She eventually was sent in secret to a hospital in Rome, where they ran more tests and even performed the same surgery on her. And like before, everything came to pass, it showed she was completely healed. There was no trace of the aneurysm. Now, this healing was eventually confirmed as a miracle by Pope Francis on July 5th, 2013, and paved the way for John Paul II's canonization the following April. So that constitutes three healing miracles attributed to the saint's intercession. And finally, I'd like to talk about a healing miracle attributed to St. Mother Teresa's intercession. And it's fitting that we talk about this particular miracle occurring through the intercession of Mother Teresa following the healing miracle attributed to Pope St. John Paul II, given that they were good friends and all. The miracle is that of Monica, the healing of Monica Besra in Bengali, India. In 1998, Monica had swelling in her abdomen caused by accumulation of fluid in the tissues called tumefaction that measured to about 6 inches. It was unclear as to whether the growth was due to cancer or tuberculosis. This growth caused great pain for Monica, which she describes as follows. For 2 months, I had severe pain, terrible pain, and I was crying. I was not able to sleep. I could lie only on the left side, and I couldn't stand straight. In another interview, Monica further describes her condition. I was so ill, I couldn't eat anything. I would immediately throw up. The Sisters of Missionaries of Charity even took me to a doctor in Siliguri, which he said I might not regain consciousness if operated upon. So it's pretty severe. Monica reports that her sister eventually took her to the newly opened Missionaries of Charity Center near their village the day before the first anniversary of Mother Teresa's death on September 4th. Their purpose was to ask the sisters for prayers, and Monica details her visit as follows. I was too ill to move, but two sisters supported me there. There was a photograph of Mother Teresa there. When I entered the church, a blinding light emanated from Mother's photo and enveloped me. I didn't know what was happening. I was too ill to sit for long and was soon brought back to my bed. Now, it's reported that the sisters put a medal of Mary that had been touched to Mother Teresa's body over Besra's abdomen and asked for Mother's intercession. Upon waking the next day, 8 hours later, Monica found that her stomach was much smaller and the lump disappeared 3 days later. And to what did she attribute this? Well, Monica confidently asserts, I am sure that Mother Teresa made me all right. After this, the sisters took Monica to a doctor to get checked out. The medical exam showed that the abdominal mass was gone and that she no longer needed surgery. The occurrence was reported to a local diocese, and a team of diocesan investigators interviewed Monica and a series of doctors, all of whom confirmed that the abdominal mass had disappeared. 9 of the 11 doctors were not Catholic. With the information provided by the investigators, the Archbishop of Calcutta, Henry D'Souza, declared the following. The probe found the miracle to have met the essential requisites of being organic, immediate, permanent, and intercessionary in nature. Notice the direct correlation between the miraculous healing and the intercession of Mother Teresa. That's something that has to be present in order for this to be confirmed a miracle. The religious context provides for us the source of the miracle. And notice, too, that it's permanent. It's not something that is eventually going to regress back. The illness is not going to come back. The miracle was recognized by the Vatican in 2002 and was used for Mother Teresa's beatification. Now, although doctors did not doubt the disappearance of the mass, a few of them decried the miraculous explanation, attributing the disappearance to science. Manul Islam, one of the local doctors, denied the story altogether, stating, it isn't possible for someone with a tumor to be cured like that. So notice he's acknowledging the effect, but denying the miraculous cause. Another doctor, Ranjan Kumar Mustafi, said in an interview with the station NDTV, we treated Monica Besra for her illness. There was no such thing as a miracle. Medical science cured her. Some doctors took the route and claimed that it wasn't a tumor, but a cyst from which Monica recovered after prolonged treatment. But the statements by these doctors shouldn't cast doubt on the miraculous nature of the event. Why? Well, doctors had been treating Monica with no success. Monica says as much. I visited many doctors, she said, underwent a long medication process, but nothing helped. So the medical causes, the natural causes, did not bring about the effect. These doctors can't attribute the disappearance of the mass to their treatments when their treatments fail time and time again. For the mass to go away only after the sisters invoke Mother Teresa's intercession provides a strong reason to think that medicine is not the deciding factor here. And if not medicine and no natural causal explanation, then we can reasonably attribute it to the divine. And so we have a miraculous effect being brought about here specifically through the intercession of Mother Teresa of Calcutta, thereby providing us a fourth piece of miraculous evidence along with St. Pio, Venerable Fulton Sheen, and Pope St. John Paul II that the saints in heaven do in fact intercede for us. Well, my friends, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of The Catholic Reason. My claim today, like in our last episode, is that the saints in heaven do in fact intercede for us, and I gave three arguments in support of this claim. From God's goodness, communicating to creatures the gift of causality and causing goodness in others, which the saints in heaven share in. From the saints' awareness that they are cooperators with God in our salvation, which would include intercessory prayer. And from that awareness and the role that they have with God, it follows that they would in fact live out that role. And then finally, from the miraculous healings attributed to the intercessory prayers of Padre Pio, Fulton Sheen, John Paul II, and Mother Teresa. Well, friends, thanks for listening to The Catholic Reason, again, a production of St. Michael Catholic Radio based in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Note that you can download the show through whichever podcast platform you use by subscribing to the Eastern Oklahoma Catholic Podcast. You can also access the archived episodes at my website, carlobroussard.com, under the audio tab. And be sure to check out all the other great resources that I have there at carlobroussard.com. I invite you to join me again next week for The Catholic Reason as we continue to look at Catholic claims and the reasons behind them. Tell a friend. I'll talk to you then. God bless.